little forms burn toxic green. Vacant eyes lit with everlasting hellfire.
Hey there, and welcome to episode 43 of Let's Watch Scary Movies. As always, we are your horror hosts. I am Jenny.
And I'm Caitlin. Hello, hello.
Hi, episode 43.
Happy episode 43.
Yeah.
It's an auspicious number.
I mean, it should have been last week's that I really noted, you know, episode 42. But for all my Douglas Adams fans out there, have you ever read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
No.
It's like my favorite book.
But I've read The Anarchist Cookbook.
Okay. There's literally no link there, but okay. So there's a big computer in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and it's tasked with for coming up with the answer to the question. What is the answer? And the answer is 42. The question is the life. What is, you know, what is the meaning of life, the universe and everything? 42.
42.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. So we're late.
We are late. That little deep dive. Anyway, Caitlin, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I look like a bunny.
You do. We've moved back to trying to record on Zoom after the sound issues we've been having on whatever it was we were using before. And we've discovered filters, so we're recording this. Caitlin's a bunny and I'm a pig. I make a good
cute
pig. Yeah. We should like put these recordings up available to people if they, you know, donate some money to us for the podcast.
Don't you want to see us dressed like bunnies and piglets?
Yeah. Who doesn't want to see that?
Little baby piglets.
We look very, very cute. But anyway, we are here today to discuss the 2022 insanity that is Barbarian.
Yes.
What a film.
Do you know, so I actually watched this last month when I was flying home for Christmas. I always look on, because occasionally there will be films on the flights. This is like long haul international transatlantic flights that are not out yet or that are brand new out. This occasionally happens. I don't know how it works, but so I find this. I don't know anything about it. I've never heard of it. And it's listed under horror. And I thought, oh, a girl goes to stay at an Airbnb and it goes wrong. This sounds interesting. That was literally the description. So I watched it and oh my gosh, I was like watching it on this tiny screen on the flight, completely freaked out, rigid in suspense.
Was anyone sat next to you?
No, I got really lucky when I flew over and I was sitting alone, but there were kids behind me. And I do often think when children sit behind me, because I tend to watch horror films, depending on how bloody they are, it's kind of like, I just hope they're not looking at my screen. Because I don't know about you, but I totally check out everybody else's screens.
Yeah.
I want to know what everybody's watching.
I mean, I've never been on a flight with, I've never done a long haul flight, but just in general, when people are like watching stuff in public.
Yeah, on their iPads or whatever. Yeah, it's like, what are you watching? You see everything. I've seen everything from like Breaking Bad and to like cartoons and anime. One time a guy was watching porn on the tube.
Yeah,
that was
I've
awkward.
Seen, I've seen people watching.
Why?
On,
why would you? Why would you watch porn? Yeah. Why?
Yeah. Nothing like the National Express. And then every time after that, if they get up to go to the toilet, are you like, oh god?
Oh my! But what? You can't. It is illegal to do anything about it.
Yeah. Like what? Why?
My bunny ears are twitching in indignity. Like I can't believe it.
This is a very confused piglet.
But yeah, so I watched it on the plane and I was like, I love this. And I went home and I asked my horror loving parents which I mentioned frequently on this podcast, if they'd seen it, and they had, and they liked it. And I was like, okay, we should definitely review it. And I'm glad I got to watch it again. We sort of watched it together remotely last
night.
Yeah,
so we watched it last night. Now, I'd seen the trailer for this at some point last year. And
does the trailer give anything away?
The trailer is very, very good. And the writer slash director, Zach Greger, even I've just been listening to an interview with him that he did with Mike Munzer, shout out Evolution of Horror podcast. And he said about how, you know, if you watch the trailer, that is not the film that you're going to see. So the trailer is all kind of the first part, shall we say, of the film. Mm-hmm. It's all, you know, the Airbnb kind of switch up and
which is also the description that I mentioned earlier. It's literally like a one sentence. They were so clever in their marketing and that, because that all does happen, but they didn't give anything away. And I thought that was so, it was giving me like Blair Witch marketing vibe, like you know.
It's very it's very, very good. And so I knew, and then I knew enough to know that it was creepy man, we've seen this before kind of thing. But then all the reviews came out because this got showed at Fright Fest, London Fright Fest, and it did really, really well, and everyone was raving about it. And it was like, okay, so it's got to be a particularly good film, you know, for the if it's just a bog standard evil dude film. And yeah, everyone was like, no, you have to watch this. This is different. And what really got me was when I saw the cast, because in the trailer you only see, I've forgotten the
Tess.
Yeah, yeah.
Keith,
so you see Tess. You see Tess and Keith, who it's I've forgotten the actress's name. And
he's a Sarsgaard.
Yeah, he's Bill Skarsgård. He's Bill the one Skarsgård. Who plays Pennywise in the new It films. Yeah, so you only see those two. So when later on I saw like the cast and it had Justin Long in it, and I love Justin Long, I was like, oh wow, okay. Yeah, so I was really, really looking forward to seeing it. And then it came on Disney Plus, and it was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to watch that. But as always at the moment, I just don't seem to actually get around to watching things until the night before we record. So, yeah, I was like, yeah, let's watch this. And, oh, my God, I loved it.
Well, and I think it's worth noting here before we even describe it or get into spoilers, obviously, the less you know about it, I think the better.
Absolutely.
So I would say, even at this point, if you're listening to the podcast and you haven't seen it, it is such a delight to go in knowing nothing that I would recommend that you go right now, stop the podcast.
Yeah.
Go watch the film and then come back, because even, you know, we're going to do a spoiler free description right here in a minute, but I would say even then, like, just the less you know, I literally read one sentence on the plane and it was all the better, more joyful experience for that. If what you're looking for is scares, which is, I'm on the constant lookout for scares. So go right now. Bye.
Yeah. We'll see you in like, I don't know how long this is, but
see you in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might need to pause, use the bathroom.
Yeah.
Whatever.
You might need
I'll see you in 2 hours.
See you in 2 hours. Like last night when we watched it before we went to bed, Andy had to watch an episode of The Simpsons because he was so stressed out by the end of the film.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. If you need like a, I did watch an episode of Come Dine With Me. I'm like fully obsessed because it's on Netflix at the moment. Yeah. And then I went to bed.
Yeah.
And I'd even seen it before. So Jenny, would you like to, because it has been you who has the honor of doing the spoiler-free
Okay. So
you don't have to do it in haiku format. You can if you want, but you don't have
what
to.
What was the haiku again? Was it 575?
I don't know. We're just making things up.
Okay.
597. She's counting on her fingers, guys.
Yeah. Girl arrives at rental property. Hot but creepy dude already there. Nothing is what it seems.
Bam.
Done.
I'm digitally high-fiving you.
Thank you.
Also, wait a minute. Hot? Is Bill Skarsgård hot?
I don't think so. I don't think so either. But, like,
who's the Skarsgård who was in The Northman?
Oh, Eric from True Blood. He's the hot one.
Okay, I'll take that Skarsgård.
Yeah,
please.
Yeah. Eric from True Blood / the Northman. Also, when he plays Tarzan in the live action Tarzan film and just has like these incredible knuckles. I don't know what it is about those knuckles.
Knuckles? Okay. Oh, wow.
It sounds weird, but seriously.
She likes a knuckle.
Who knew?
Do you know? There's so many of them. I think there's one called Stellan.
Oh, Skarsgård. Okay.
I believe there's only 10 knuckles.
There's probably about 10 Skarsgårds.
There probably is. What is there more of in the world? Knuckles or Skarsgårds? And I remember, do you remember this? I don't know if you remember, but Melissa, I think it was Melissa and Jason, they were going to start a band called the Skarsgård Skarsgårds. So whenever I think of the Skarsgårds, I think of the band Skarsgård Skarsgårds. I'm a fan.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, there's a lot of them. Even like the old one who's in the Marvel films.
Yeah, who was also in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, what's he called? He's the most famous one of all. He's in everything.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look it up now because it's going to really bug me.
Skarsgård, member number one.
Skarsgård.
The original founding band member.
Oh, Stellan Skarsgård.
That's what I said. Stellan. Yeah.
Yeah. Alex Skarsgård is Eric from True Blood. Then there's Bill
Skarsgård.
I never
watched True Blood, but he's the hot one.
I love True Blood.
I have a friend who had a True Blood tattoo. That's how much she loved it.
Okay, that's more than I probably would have gone with. And yeah, then there's like Walter Skarsgård, Gustav Skarsgård. There's just a lot of Skarsgårds.
Are any of them involved in politics?
I'm not sure IMDb will tell me that.
Sorry.
So that is as far as basically I can go with no spoilers. A girl test. Basically, the film is set in Detroit in a very rundown area. And Tess has a job interview in Detroit. So she drives. She's got like an Airbnb for a couple of nights. And she turns up in the pouring rain. And she can't get hold of the home. There's no one there to meet her. She can't, her code doesn't work in the key box, and when it does, the key's not there. She's freaking out. She gets into her car, a light comes on in the house, she goes back, door opens, and we meet Keith. And Keith is also, he's already staying in the house, he's renting it as well. So there is a dilemma of what to do. And you know, in the end, she goes into the house to try and work it out. Honestly, I can't really say much more than that because I just think it's very difficult to go into any more without giving stuff away. And this film works so well the first time you see it without knowing much. Like I'd read something whilst I was doing research for last week's episode, X, that mentioned something about this film that made me go, oh, okay. So I did actually know a little bit more than I wanted to before I went into it. But even then, I still had it wrong.
Yeah, again, it's just reiterating. The less you know, the better. So, yeah. I mean, having said all of that, what was your score?
I gave it, what are we, I mean, again, without, I was going to think of something funny to call the rankings, but I don't think I can without giving away.
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah, so it's Stick with Pentacles. I'm giving it 4.5.
I also gave it 4.5.
I'm struggling to think why I didn't give it 5.
I can think of a couple reasons, funnily enough. And I think when we get into it later, like in fact, I would even say to some extent there was some in my mind connections to X. In a sense, about how certain things were done. Yeah. So I can think of some reasons. Like, I did question, why is it not a perfect film? And yeah. So,
like, it wasn't perfect, but.
But yeah. It was close and it delivered on so many levels.
It was creepy. It was scary. It was.
It made you think at the end. It kind of stays with you a little bit.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I know you said, like, yes, it's great to go in not knowing anything. And you're right. Nothing will replicate that first watch. Right. It's like you're constantly chasing that scare drug. You can't replicate your first time watching The Exorcist or, you know, the first time for a lot of the classics. But I have to say, watching it again this time, I was looking for different things. And when we get into the breakdown, I can say more about that, because I'm actually sort of glad that it was my second time watching it. And it was very enjoyable for that reason too.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I would quite happily watch this again very soon.
Yes.
Which isn't something I say that often.
But for me, yeah, I rated it 4.5. And it also made me think, because I rated last week's film 4.5. And so I was thinking, like, yeah, I do like it better in some ways, but I also think they're equally as strong in my mind, in my the rating system of my mind.
Yeah.
So I stood by that. So
yeah, I think they're both as good. I think I enjoyed this one more. And I really loved X, but I think this one was more fun. And in some ways more scary.
Oh, I think it was more scary.
Yeah.
100%. I actually think the other one was a little more camp, a little more fun, and this one was scarier. And so I loved them for kind of different reasons, just to kind of compare
the
two.
I think this one was a little bit, there was some more like absurd moments in this one.
Yeah.
Like, so left field that I was like, oh, okay, you know.
Yes, left field is that's where we're standing at the moment. Yeah. Yes.
So should we get into it?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Now it's time for a breakdown.
Barbarian. Here we are. Barbarian. So something that I really love that happens throughout this film is that you have a static shot of something, and then an object moves into that shot. And it happens a few times throughout the movie, and I don't know what it is about that choice, but it puts you on edge. Because you're watching a horror movie. You're looking at this seemingly normal or mundane set or scene, and then something moves into it. Mm-hmm. It just kind of sets you on edge. So, and the movie opens like that. So the movie opens with like the shot of a house.
Yeah, just this little white, like wooden house, nothing fancy. But that's also how X started last week that I really liked. You know, you have that static shot, you're looking through the grass at the farmhouse, and then the police car pulls in to shot.
Yeah, you're right.
And I agree, I really love these kind of shots where something, you know, you're focusing on something because the camera's not moving, and then something moves into that shot. So it's like, what are you supposed to be focusing on? But yeah, I really like that.
Yeah. So it's just this, I thought the house was yellow, but maybe I'm wrong. So we've got this little house perfectly framed in the rain, and the sound, the soundscape for this film is so, it's literally mimics your heart pounding in many instances, but faster.
Yep.
But also sounds like it's been put through a lot of like robot machines. And so it sounds just non-human or like not human made. And I don't know, it's extremely effective. I loved the soundscape.
Yeah.
And it's used sparingly as well, which I appreciated. Because I know we've talked about before how, like, in something like Suspiria, the sound itself is almost an extra character because it's so imposing all the time. And I felt like the sound in this one was occasionally imposing, but used so economically that when it did happen, it was all the more scary for it.
Yeah, like this, when you have the car pulling up and it's this big rainstorm, and yeah, it was almost like a chorus of screams almost, but like not continuous. Like you said, it was almost like a wah, 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 but all in different pitches.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like a rave of screams.
I'm raving right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's true. And so the car moves into the shot. It's pouring down rain, and then the camera, like, you've got all this sound that Jenny just beautifully demonstrated, and then the camera zooms in, and it almost looks like you're going through the window, and then you're in the car with her, and that sound cuts, and it's just her on her phone trying to find, you know, make sure she's at the right address. She's looking at her confirmation email from Airbnb, like 471, okay, that's the address, you know. But it's just the way that shot and the sound, and that's like the first minute in the film.
Yeah.
So I'm already like, wow. And bear in mind, for me as well, I watched it a teeny tiny screen on the back of a seat in front of me on a plane, so I didn't even really get to like enjoy these things. And now all of a sudden I'm watching it, and I can really, you know, notice it. I can really observe it. But anyway, I'll stop. I'll put my boner away. So,
never put your boner away, Caitlin.
But I'll say as well, I know, right, that the neighborhood is fucking rough. It's bad. And in the rain, I thought it was super interesting how they shot it, because it looks like a totally normal neighborhood.
Yeah. It looks like a normal neighborhood in the rain.
Yeah, you can't tell at all. And so later when she walks out in the daylight, you really get a shock. So I was, because I know what's coming, I was kind of looking at it in the rain, trying to see if you could tell. And they dressed that set and like the, however they did the effects, like they did it so well.
It just looks like a very, like there's no lights on any of the houses because she's looking around.
But you can see there's a car, there's like, you know.
Yeah, there's a car. It just looks like a very, you know, quiet neighborhood.
Could be anywhere. And it seems, you know, it does seem empty. And so, yeah, she can't get in. There's no key in the lockbox. She's tried to call the owner of the house. And then, as Jenny described earlier, like the light comes on in the house. And she sees
that
it.
That made me jump. Like, because she gives up and she goes back to the car because she's raining and she's like knocked on the doors and things and she can't get in. She goes back to the car and she's just like, fuck, what do I do? And then suddenly a light comes on in the house. And it's like, shit.
And you, between the rain and the darkness and the music and a woman on her own and having read the description of the Airbnb person, you're already on edge. I mean, you're already on edge. So Pennywise opens the door.
Mm-hmm. Sleepy Pennywise.
And I mean, everything he does is so suspicious. Yes. I do not trust him at all. And he's not even really, he's just very seemingly innocuous, but yet because of the description and because of the setup, because of the way the film lures you into thinking that this is the main.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know.
Like storyline, yeah.
At first he's like confused and she's like, I'm renting this house. And he's like, no, I am. The house must be double booked, and one of them has booked it on like Airbnb, one of them has booked it on like another house rental place. She's tried to call them all, like the property management company already, and she hasn't had an answer. And eventually he's like, okay, well, why don't you like come in to kind of sort this out in here? And she's smart. She's, you know, she's every one of us, because already I'm on edge, like, no, don't do it.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. and you can tell that she's like, no, this is not a great idea, but what other option does she have? And so she comes in and she's really smart. She only sees the bathroom, but she's like, can I see your reservation, please? Because she showed him hers. And he's like, oh yeah, like to make sure that he isn't just like in the house waiting for her to arrive kind of thing. So she goes to the toilet and she's like looking around and you can see like all his wash stuff and things. So he, you know, he's not just lurking there. It looks like he is renting the place, like his stuff's everywhere. And he shows her that he's, you know, on his phone. But again, like he comes up from behind her and she like jumps and he's like, oh, I'm really sorry. But yeah, everything about it puts you on edge, but he's not doing anything.
In fact, it almost feels like he's going out of his way to show how safe he is. And that in and of itself is making him more suspicious in my mind. Yeah. I do think he plays it so perfectly because it's borderline. He plays it borderline, like seemingly regular, but yet also because the whole setup is so, especially as a woman, like you're just on edge.
Yeah.
Just thinking so, like, would I do if I was in this?
Absolutely. And this whole bit. So, you know, he's acting weird, but like not necessarily. Is it just that it's creepy? Is he creepy, or is just the situation weird and he's kind of weirded out by it? Like he is. He's like, oh, I'll make you a tea. And she doesn't want one. He's like, oh, I'll make myself a tea, because he's like, what the fuck do I do? There's like now,
right.
And he's like worried that she's like freaking out and she's trying to get a hotel room and she can't get one. And then he's like, oh, I've just remembered. There's like a convention in town. You probably won't get one.
When he said that, I was like, I don't believe him.
Yeah, I don't believe him.
He's just, yeah.
Yeah. And he, in the end, he's like, look, why don't you stay here? I'll sleep on the sofa. Like, you can sleep in the bedroom. And she's like, oh, but then, like, what other choice does she have, really? Like, it's,
I mean,
not safe.
Unless she sleeps in her car, and he makes it clear that
it's
sleeping in cars, he says something like the neighborhood's rough. And yeah, but I think It's interesting because on the first watch, I'm just waiting for him to do something to her. Like, again, going back to that, that's the whole way they've set it up. On the second watch, I know things. So I know that, like, it's he seems fairly normal. And I'm trying to, like, look for, just as an actor, how he played it. So that's why I think it's so interesting. But also the idea that the director is completely, he's, like, sucker punching you, right? He's, like, drawing your attention to this whole scenario. It's nothing. It's like nothing compared.
And so basically the interview I was just listening to with him, he had no idea what he was going to write. And the whole, this whole film came from this. He read a book called The Gift of Fear by Gavin Dubecker, who was a security consultant. And the whole book is teaching women how to watch men in their day-to-day interactions and be hyper-vigilant for these micro little red flags that men give off that could be nothing, but could also be, like, something, you know, could be sinister.
That is so interesting.
Yeah, and he read, and Zach Gregor read this book, and it stuck with him. And he was like, this is awful. I don't have to think about any of these things because I'm a dude, but all the women do. And so he was like, he decided, he said, I've just got to write something. And all he wrote, so it wasn't for anything, it was just for him, was he just had the idea of, like, trying to put, you know, a man or woman in this situation where, and he, so he's like, oh, a double booked Airbnb, that'll be it. And he just wanted to write something where this guy had all of these little micro red flags.
I wonder what they were. I'm so intrigued.
Yeah, so it was things like, you know, what was it, some of the things he said, you know, like, offering help that wasn't asked for. So, like, you know, he went and got her bags from the car, and was like, oh, I'll make you a tea, and then she said no, but then he still made her a tea, like things like that, you know.
Yeah,
and it's like,
yeah,
chances are they're nothing, but actually they could be signs about something.
Oh,
and then,
I love that.
And then he was like,
so
I didn't know where it was gonna go. I just, every day I just literally started writing a new page, and the story just turned into what it is. But yeah,
wow.
the whole film came from, he read this book, and it just made him really think about the fact that, you know, women, the women in his life have to be, like, this hyper-vigilant all the time.
Yeah, inhabiting a male, like, masculine-presenting body, he doesn't have to think about so many things. It's that kind of, like, privilege, isn't it? But that I want to read that book.
It's called The Gift of Fear.
Interesting title as well. Okay.
Yeah.
So a recommendation. Yes. Thank you. From the, what's it called? Is this from the History of Horror?
Evolution of Horror podcast.
Or the
yes.
Evolution of Horror. Yeah.
Yeah. So Mike Munzer, the host of Evolution of Horror, he did an interview with the writer slash director, Zach Gregor, just before the film came out, I think. And I haven't listened to all of it. I just, I spotted it on there because I listened to Evolution Horror a lot. And I, and I just listened to, like, where he was talking about his inspiration for the film.
Part. Brilliant. So I did want to say as well that after he invites her into the house is when you get the, you drop the title. The title
yes,
card.
Barbarian.
So you get the title of the film, which I liked how he divided that as well. The director, like, and there it was. And then she's in the house, and then there you go.
So after the title screen, we have, like, she's just in the house now. And I think it's kind of like, okay, she's going to stay. He won't let her sleep on this couch. She's like, she wants to sleep in, it's like, you have to sleep in the bedroom. I, you know, call me old fashioned, but there's no way I could sleep knowing that you're on the sofa. And she's like, but I've kind of got a thing about clean sheets. So he puts the washing on, like, he cleans all the bedding for her. Cause there's, oddly, there's, like, nothing in the house. Like, there's no second set of bedding. Like, it's a bit weird. You'd think at an Airbnb there'd be, like, more bedding and things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's no bedding, so he puts the bedding on for a wash for her. She goes to the bathroom to wash up, and apparently initially in this scene, because obviously Zach Gregor was quite influenced by Psycho, in this film, because you do get, like, a touch of the Norman Bates about Keith. Very, very nice. And apparently, you know, when she's like, oh, I need to go, like, wash up, I need to use the bathroom, apparently, like, she goes in and she, like, washes her face and things. But initially he had her, like, get in the shower, and he framed the shot very much like Janet Leigh. And then when he first showed it, like, to a test audience, all the women were like, no, 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 we would never do that. We would never get naked and, like, get in a shower with a house with a complete stranger.
That's so true.
It's so true. Because even when she goes in the bathroom, I'm like, oh, my God, I would immediately be looking just for something. I would need some sort of, you know, weapon near me just to make me feel a bit safer.
Well, she does. I mean, to give Tess a little bit of credit, she checks the locks on the doors. Yep. She finds his ID and takes a picture of it.
Everything she does is what I would do if I had to be in that situation.
Yes. Like, and I like this because she's a protagonist I can get behind because she's not doing dumb shit, at least not yet. So I'm like, yeah. Okay, I'm with you. Exactly like you said, I would be doing all of these same things. And yeah, I love that they put it in front of a test audience and all the women said that because it's so fucking true. Like, there's, and that's male gaze for you. And not even male gaze, but he was probably trying to just solidify that connection between Psycho, you know, that little reference. But yeah, it's so absolutely, you would never take all your clothes off. I don't care if there's a lock on the door. No fucking way.
Yeah. And, you know, it's very much, it's because he was like, yeah, I just didn't think, because, you know, I would totally do that, I would totally get in the shower. And it's like, yeah, you're a dude, of course you would.
Yeah, of course you would.
We wouldn't. But yeah, so she, and when she comes out of the bathroom, he sat there with, he said before about how there was a bottle of wine that had been left by the property, but he hadn't opened it. And he'd offered her some wine and she said no, and he'd made her a tea which she hadn't drunk. So when she comes out, he sat there with the bottle of wine and he's like, I want to have some of this wine, but I noticed you didn't drink your tea. And actually, that makes sense, like, I totally get it, you didn't, you know, you don't know me, I could have put anything in there, but I'm going to open the wine, and just in case you want some too, I thought I would wait until you were here so you could see me open it.
Which is both, like, nice but also suspicious, because again, he's going out of his way now to try to make her, put her at ease somewhat.
Yeah.
And it actually, I the first time I was still like, yeah, no.
Yeah. No. And she even said, she's like, no, thank you. But he can't, you know, he, she comes and sits down at the table with him anyway. And he's like, right, so, you know, why are you here? And she says that she's got a job interview with, as like a research assistant for a documentary maker. And he's like, oh, you know, and he's asking questions about it, and it's kind of some obscure, she's like, oh, she made this film last year about like jazz, and he's seen it, and she can't believe that he's seen it. And instantly I'm like, did he know that who she was, you know?
Yes, did, like, he research, did he know, her,
did he research her? Because she's shocked that he's actually seen this film, and like talking about, and he like names scenes from it and things, and it's like, okay, has he researched her? And then he's like, oh, what's her next project, what are you gonna be helping her on? And she's saying about how it's all about Detroit, because obviously they're in Detroit, and the music scene, and about how these like artist communes have like sprung up in all the parts of the city where the housing, you know, like the neighborhood they're currently in, where everyone's left and everything's really cheap. And he's like, oh, well, I'm one of the guys that set that up. And he's like, yeah, oh, you know who you should interview for that documentary? Me. I'm such and such. I started this. And she's like, oh my God, really? Because that is, you know, what she's there for. And
it's, again, like a charity, like, or something, right?
Yeah, like some sort, like, of, like, yeah, they've set up some sort of like artist community, creative community, where, and they have like houses all over, you know, Michigan and Detroit for people who, you know, like artists and low paid artists and things. So they've got somewhere to go and stay. So immediately I'm like, wait, hang on. Like, that's too much of a coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah.
But by this point, you know, they've got some sort of bond. She starts drinking the wine as well, and they get chatting and they have like a really good time together. Like,
and they do. They sort of like make friends.
Yeah.
And
he's definitely attracted to her. And I think she is a bit to him as well.
Once she relaxes a little bit, there's a slight flirtation there. I agree.
And like when she's first pulling up, at the very beginning, you see someone called Marcus calling her and she won't answer his call. And she's like talking to him about how she's in this relationship that she's not very happy with. And it's kind of like what other people have expected her to do and how she doesn't want that. And he's talking about, oh, well, you know, you should follow your own path and do your own thing. And, you know, if he's not making you happy, kind of thing. And he says there's this really good line where, so even if it means you get your heart ripped out your chest again, And she says, why is it always girls who get their hearts ripped out? And he says, oh, girls can do the ripping too, trust me. And I'm like, ooh, like ripping hearts out. Like, is this something?
But again, like taking a step back for a second, something that this film does so well, and again, we talked about this with X too, is the character development.
Yeah.
I care about these people now that I know more about them, and the film has taken the time to reveal about them, you know, reveal things about their hopes and dreams and their current situation. So, I mean, that just goes such a long way in horror films, I feel. But they also, at this point, discuss his male privilege. And I think that's really interesting that she kind of points out to him, you know, I was very wary, you know. And they have this like self-aware conversation.
Absolutely. Where she calls him out because she's like, oh, if this had been the other way around and I'd been here first, she's like, I wouldn't have let you in, but you would have just walked in anyway. And he, at first he's kind of like, oh, would I? But you know, yeah. And he doesn't like be a dick about it. He doesn't really try and argue against her. He's just kind of like, oh yeah, I didn't like, I kind of guessed that you would be a bit nervous, but you know.
Yeah.
And yeah. So again, it's like, oh, is he like just lulling her into a false sense of security? And then it's bedtime. And he kind of takes it. The great scene where he's like putting the clean bedding on the bed for her. And there's a scene where he's like inside the duvet and he's like, they're laughing. And he's like, yeah, this is how you do it. And she's like, no, it's not. And he's like inside it. And for a second, I thought he was going to throw the duvet over her and like, you know, so that she was trapped, and then that was how it was going to all start.
Like, this playful scene of him teaching her how to do the inside out trick with the, when you're changing the duvet. Are we all aware of that? We all know that, right?
Yeah.
And I completely agree. The first time I was like, what's he going to do? He's going to try and blindfold her. I still didn't trust him. And it's really, it is a bit of social commentary on just sort of the lengths that women go to, first of all, but also how you can't let go of this just feeling that something's not right, or that you just don't totally trust him, because it's unsafe to fully trust men that you don't know. So it's just sort of like a sad state of gender affairs, you know, that this movie is commenting on in a way that to me feels good enough. Like, we're discussing it, and this was sort of my issue with X, is that I felt like they touched on topics but didn't do enough. Whereas
I feel like this one definitely went into it a lot more.
Exactly. But anyway, so they go to bed. Tess goes into the bedroom, locks the door.
Yep.
And he goes and sleeps on the couch. And then you can see she's kind of still a little on it, but she goes to sleep.
Yeah,
and
she goes to sleep.
And you hear like the door creaking in the middle of the night, and it wakes her up.
Yeah, it's like a weird noise.
Because she shut the door behind her, and it was the sound of the door just creaking on its hinges. So she wakes up and she sees that the door is open, and she's rightfully, you know, a little stressed about it, a little concerned. So gets up, and she can hear these noises coming from the other room, and it turns out it's Keith having a hell of a fucking nightmare. I mean,
yeah, he's like whimpering.
He's whimpering and sort of moaning in his sleep. And so I don't know. It's disturbing. The scene is disturbing because he's such a good actor and he plays it so well. But I almost feel like, why does she wake him up? I would just go back in my room and lock the door. But I guess she wants to know, did he open the door?
She's freaked out, and he's obviously in distress. Like, I would be like, oh, you're having a nightmare. But yeah, so
you're not supposed to wake people up that are having nightmares. It's actually worse. You're supposed to
sleepwalkers.
No, I think it's nightmares as well, because then it's like, if you let them sleep through the nightmare, they won't remember it. But if you wake them up in the middle of it, then they'll remember it. Mm-hmm. I might have made that up. I don't know. I might have totally invented that.
But yeah, she wakes him up.
She wakes him up.
She scares the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And he's like, why, and what the hell? And she's like, oh, you were like making noises and someone's opened my door. Did you open the door? And he's like, no. So he goes back to sleep. But at this point, because the house is still dark, and like you look back down the hallway to where the bedroom is and things, and it's like, was there somebody there? For a second, I'm like, wait, was that somebody like behind her? Because it's very shadowy and very creepy. And already I'm like so on edge that every like bump, everything, I'm like, oh, what the hell was that?
Well, and you're also just waiting. You're just waiting for something to happen because all of the right pieces are in place, right? It's
Yeah.
dark and someone's having a nightmare and the door creaked and she woke up and she's in this weird house with this guy she doesn't know at an Airbnb in the middle of a neighborhood she doesn't know. And then it's morning and it's like time for the interview and nothing's happened. And so once again, you're kind of something that I really loved about this movie and a word that I used to describe it in my like final review is that it's unpredictable. And I think that's what one of the things that I love the most about it,
Yep.
that I couldn't see where it was going. So then it's morning and she and you're like, oh, okay. And off she goes to her interview. And I texted Jenny and said, cute interview outfit. I
Yep.
liked it.
But this
It
is the
was very
part when
cute.
she leaves the house and she pauses, like as she sees the neighborhood. Because yeah, when you first see it at nighttime, it's just dark and you can see all these houses. But when she goes outside, the whole place is abandoned. All the houses are covered in graffiti and like run down and have no
Oh,
windows and like the
it's like
cars burnt
way
out.
worse.
Yeah, it's
Yeah,
like
way worse
Mad
than you
Max
think.
land.
Really rough. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you
And
know, they're not abandoned. They're like trap houses. So
yeah.
they're either like full of squatters or people without a home or probably drug dealers or,
Yeah.
people. No, there's people living in those houses. It looks like really horrific and it's scary. It
Yeah.
was giving Candyman vibes
Yeah.
and like Cabrini Green. Yeah, so she goes to her interview and the film does again this thing with the window. So she sits down in a cafe with the woman that she's doing the interview with, and as the interview starts, the camera pulls out so that you're out of the window looking in, so you can't hear anything that they're saying until the very end when it like pulls back in. So it's just sort of this theme because earlier we said like it did it with the car in like the very first opening scene. I don't know. It gives this feeling of it's like a different point of view shot. It's like voyeuristic in a way, how you're like with them and then you're being pulled out. And then, yeah, just this idea. I'm thinking about windows, like invisible barriers, and what sort of way that manifests in the concept of the film. I don't know. I'm probably maybe looking too much into it, but it's just an effect that I really
Yeah,
liked.
it
But
was very
anyway,
cool.
yeah. So at the end of the interview, you kind of zoom back in and you can hear them. And the woman's like, oh, where are you staying? The woman that interviewed her. And she says the neighborhood. I can't remember what it's called. And the lady's like, whoa, whoa,
You should not
whoa.
be there.
You shouldn't be there. What are you doing? And Tess is like, oh, it's only for one night. She sort of brushes it
Yeah.
off. So Tess drives back to the Airbnb, and I was thinking, like, is she leaving now? Like, get out of there, let's go. But as she pulls in, you see this homeless man,
Oh,
sort
this was
of run
terrifying.
running down the street after her, screaming, "Don't go in that house!
But
Don't go
again,
in
it's very,
that
like you said at
house!"
the beginning, it's the same sort of shot where we've got a static shot of the car and her like getting out the car, and you can see this guy running towards her, like coming closer and closer and closer. And yeah, and he's like, little girl, stay out of that house, get out of that house.
And
And
it was
then,
interesting on the second watch to know that he's trying to warn her. But
yeah.
obviously on the first watch, I'm like, get in the house, go,
Yeah,
run.
and she does. She gets into the house. She closes the door. She calls the police, and
She
the
does all
police,
of the things. She does
and
all the things.
the police in this film are awful. The police are just like, oh, the woman on dispatch is like, because she's trying to look outside to see if he's still there, and they're like, no, they're not. I can't see them, and she's like, okay, well, it's fine. And Tess is like, well, wait, aren't you sending someone? She's like, we haven't got any squad cars available at the minute.
So, little sort of American interjection here. This is actually a real thing and it's very common. And I used to live in a neighborhood like this where the police wouldn't come. So, probably they're receiving a call from a neighborhood that they know very
Yeah.
well and they don't go there.
Yeah.
So, there was also a little bit of commentary here on sort of the class system and like homelessness. And I actually really appreciated that because cops will act like this. They will
Well,
assume that
yeah, like the
you're
way
a
that,
crackhead or
yeah,
you're.
like later on when you get the actual like police officers that arrive later on and they just are so dismissive and just because of how she looks and where she is.
And that she's a woman of color
Yeah.
because she is not white. I don't know what exactly Tess you know, but she's not white. And so, but the police are also not white, but it was interesting. Like this is less about the race part of it and much more about the class system that exists. So I just thought, you know, that person on the operator on the phone, they weren't going to send anybody. They didn't care.
No.
So yeah. And that is, as I say, a very real thing. So she makes sure all the doors are locked, goes into the bathroom and realizes that there's no toilet paper. So she goes on a mission to find where is the toilet paper in this weird Airbnb house. So she's looking. And then she sees the door to the basement and she looks down the stairs.
She looks
down the stairs and she sees the toilet paper on like a shelf down there.
Yeah.
So she goes down to get the toilet paper and she sees like a rope on a shelf. And so she pulls on the, and it's like a rope pulley connected to like
almost
a,
like coming out the wall.
Yeah. And it's connected to like a hidden door that you can't see. And the only way to open it is to pull this rope pulley. So yeah, she looks at it and says the Jordan Peele, like, yeah, she's just like, nope. And you're like, yeah, smart girl, you're not going in that fucking basement. But during this, the door, the upstairs door, is weighted or something, and it has slammed shut behind her, and so she's locked locked in the basement, which is also like one of my worst things.
I won't go in a basement because of it. I go in the one we have one at work, which is fine because it's a, you know, glass door. If I need to, I could smash it. But I've had houses with, you know, because I've lived in Victorian houses before with basements. Nope. Absolutely not.
So any basements? Yeah, I'll go into a basement as long as, I don't know. But even then she realizes she doesn't have her phone on her. She checks and then pictures it sitting on the counter in the bathroom. And she's like, shit.
But she has got the key, hasn't she? House key.
She's got the house key, yeah. So she finds a mirror, basically, and she decides, I think she's just trying to get out at this point. So she uses the mirror and positions it in such a way that she shines a light, smart girl, into the basement corridor, the little secret hidden passageway that she just found. And so she goes a little way in, and even just as soon as she takes that first step, the soundtrack kicks in, this like pounding soundscape. And again, you're just like completely, it was very intense. It was very intense. So she starts going in a ways and discovers a bed, like a dirty, disgusting
horrible room.
Like a horrible room with a camera and a bucket. And she just looks around and she gets the fuck out of there. She's like, no.
I do not like this room of rape.
Oh God. Whatever's happening in that room is horrible things. Yeah. So we were thinking
there's
of
bloody
ways.
Handprints on the wall.
Yeah, the bloody handprint. That's right. What were we calling it in our text messaging?
Oh,
Jenny called it like the door of doom. I called it like the door of depravity.
Yeah. Oh, the hallway is when they go later on down here. It's like the hallway of despair or something.
So anyway, Keith. She hears like a knock on the front door, and it's Keith trying to get in. Like, because obviously she's locked the front door behind her. And so he rescues her. They open up. There's like a tiny window through the basement. So they open it.
Yeah, there's a little basement window. He helps her open it so she can give him the house key. And then he comes in and opens the basement door and lets her out.
And I don't know about you, but at this point I was still like, part of me was like, I don't know, don't give him the key. I'm still unsure about Keith. So
yeah, I was still unsure, especially because, and this part really annoyed me, because she's obviously really distressed. She's like, oh my God, there's like this horrible room down there. Don't go down there. Don't go down there.
We need to go.
Yeah, we
need to go right now.
And
yeah.
He won't let her go. And I'm like, wait, she discovered something that he didn't want her to find out about. I was like, had he planned this all along? Like, what's happening? Does he know? Because he's like, oh, I need to go and see this. It doesn't, like, a room with a bed and a bucket doesn't sound that bad.
He's almost like he's gaslighting her in a way, because he doesn't believe her and he tries to make it sound like less than what it is. He tries to make it sound like, oh, you're totally overreacting, instead of listening to her and seeing all her signals.
He's like, oh, I'm not meaning to like belittle this. He's like, it's just obviously it doesn't sound that bad. I need to go see it for myself. And it's like, what? So you don't trust a woman?
Right.
And
she's telling
her instinct, everything about this is telling her that this is bad and she needs to get out. and you're not listening to her. And in the end, because she's like, well, fuck it, I'm not going back down there. I'm leaving. And then he emotionally manipulates her because he's like, please stay just for 30 seconds in case the door closes on me.
Yeah, he asks her to wait while he goes to investigate. His fatal flaw is not listening to women. So, and when he doesn't come back, this is where Tess, in my opinion, starts to make some very questionable decisions. And I have to wonder about it. Like, where's the loyalty here? Why doesn't she just leave? Because she goes after him. She stops hearing his voice.
Yeah.
And to me, I don't totally trust this guy still.
No,
I would have left. I would have left.
It's a trap. It's a trap. It's a trap.
Oh, yeah, I would have left. But she goes in. I don't know what this loyalty is here or later, but she has this loyalty. I don't know. Maybe it's some sort of commentary on how women tend to prioritize others above themselves, try to take care of others before themselves. I don't know, but it annoyed me. But anyway, she goes in after him and finds that.
She props the door open this time so the basement door can't shut.
Yes, she does.
With a chair.
And has her phone. And she finds a deeper door. So,
because he's not in the room, first of all. And it's like, where else could he be?
So she goes past the bed in bucket room. And keeps going. And now she starts to hear something. She can hear him screaming.
Yeah.
And the screams are scary.
Yeah. He's like screaming. Because, it's like, oh, I've even got rid of it. Like, oh, great, another secret door into hell by the look of it. Because, this one, the first one was just into, like, it's like a little wooden secret hallway thing. This is, like, going down these, like, stone steps into...
Oh, it's...
Yeah, into awfulness.
Dante's Inferno, yeah. So...
Yeah, so I'm like, oh, fuck that. And she's like, come up, like, she's screaming at this point. She's like, Keith, I can't hear you. Like, come up here. And then you can hear this really faint screaming.
I mean, it sounds like it's really far away as well.
Really,
I mean, to me,
away.
No. I would leave. I would go and call the police. I would get in my car. I would not go down there.
Yeah, I would have to admit, I probably would have gone down to the basement. I probably wouldn't have gone in the first secret door, but I would have gone down into the basement because obviously it's not that the room is then not far away. So at this point, if I can't hear him and he's not replying, something bad has happened. I'm not going to be able to fix this. I'm going to go and get someone who can.
Exactly. But I also think, to be fair to her a little bit, she probably knows on a level, like, the police aren't coming. And if she tried to call the police for help, they probably wouldn't come. So that may have contributed to her decision to, fucking go after him. So
but go and get a fucking knife or something.
Yeah, well, if she didn't, we wouldn't have a movie, I guess. But so she goes down and she finds him and he's... utterly frantic. He's a mess. And she's trying to argue. She's like, this way, it's this way out. And he's like, no, I got bit by something. And again, doesn't listen to her. Because had he listened to her, they probably would have got out. Because out from behind him, and this is your first glimpse of, like, mommy monster comes, and you don't know at this point. It's just like a white... I mean, I don't know. What
it's like naked, looks like 7 foot tall, like naked, like deformed,
long haired. Yeah.
Yeah. Just comes screaming out of the darkness, picks him up, and just smashes his head repeatedly against the wall until it's mush.
Yep. Smashes his brains in. And then you have this, like, click. And it's a scene change. And now we're with Justin Long and he's driving in his convertible, along the beach, listening to some Ricky Ticky Tavi song that I was completely vibing to. And then he gets a phone call and you're just like, I don't know about you, but I was like, whoa, what's going on? Like, wait a minute. What happened to Tess?
Yeah.
Because it's a completely new setting, character, everything.
Yep. We've got Justin Long. He's called AJ. He's an actor. Driving along and he gets a phone call from, like, the producers.
His agent. It's like his agent and the
producers. I think it's like the producers of, like, this new TV show he's in. And they're basically like, look, one of your co-stars has had some, like, put some allegations against you.
it's going to be an investigation. And he's like, whoa, 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 what do you mean? And they're like talking. And then after a while, he's like, wait, 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 wait. Like, what did she say? Did she say like, I raped you or something? And they're like, yeah. They say like, even after the investigation, if the show goes ahead, he won't be part of it.
A very bad phone call for him. So he essentially starts making phone calls and trying to sort things out and finding out how much this legal, this case, like with his lawyer, how much the legal fees are going to be.
Yeah.
And I love that they're like, well, with your rate of spending, okay, so stop spending money. But anyway, they're basically like, you're fucked. His lawyer, his accountant or whatever is like, you're fucked.
Yeah, his wealth management company are like, yeah, you like, basically he's got a house there in California, and then he's got a bunch of like properties that he owns in Michigan that like he rents out. And he's like, well, what if I sell the houses in Michigan? And they're like, well, that'll save you for a little bit, but not really. You're better off getting rid of your house here. And he won't do it because... So he jumps on a plane and flies out to Detroit to his check out his rental properties there.
Which is where he's from. It's that's like where he grew up. And again, like all this character development, I'm just living for it. So he arrives at the rental, the rental,
the house,
and
he owns the house.
He's the owner, and it's managed by like a property management company. And so he can see that they're stuffed there, and like there's a backpack and a laptop.
Yeah,
and
like Tess's car's still out the front, and
and Keith's stuff is there too, and so. Yeah. He sees the like toothbrush plugged in.
Yeah, and
so
he sees like the basement door's like still propped open and there's a light on in the basement, and he's just like, what the fuck is happening?
So he calls the property manager, who's also frankly dismissive of him. Obviously he's kind of a jerk to everybody, so there's that. But I'm guessing also news of his alleged sexual assault has gotten out, so the women are not particularly warm to him. And so they're just basically like, oh, we don't clean it until the next job is booked. Which is, I've never heard of that, but okay. So he's thinking that they just trashed the place, or the people before just kind of left their stuff.
Or they're living, like, they're
squatting there.
Yeah, he's like, I've got squatters. And he keeps shouting, like, who the fuck is staying in my house?
But he's so self-absorbed that it's like, he doesn't even really stop to think for a minute that something could be amiss or he could be in danger. He shuts the basement door and turns the light off. Anyway, he calls his friend, his childhood friend, and he's like, hey, I'm back in town. Let's meet in the bar. And so he goes and meets his friend, and his friend is like asking him, like, dude, man to man, like friend to friend, tell me what happened with this girl who's accusing you. And this is where you discover that Justin Long is the asshole of all assholes.
Yeah, because up to this point, he's been denying like the allegations completely. You know, because I'm used to Justin Long kind of being like the nice guy, like the sweet guy. Like, I will always think of him as, you know, dodgeball.
Or waiting.
Yeah, exactly. Dodgeball, waiting. Like, I love Justin Long, even in Tusk. I mean, that film is fucking terrifying. But he's like,
I haven't seen it.
Oh my God, you have to watch Tusk. Okay. But yeah, like, he's still not a bad guy in that, really. So I was kind of like, oh, maybe it is. Like, I was a bit worried at this point that it was going to be one of these films that's actually like, oh, a man's been falsely accused, you know. And
right.
I was going to have a lot of issue with that. No. Turns out he is just a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Because
He basically admits to doing it. I mean,
he's like, oh, no. Like, he's like, don't get me wrong. Like, we fucked. And, you know, I was very persuasive. Like, and he's like, his friend was like, what? Did she not want to? And he's like, oh, well, you know, like, at first she was like, oh, no, but then we like fooled around some more and then she was into it. He's like, I'm just, you know, very persistent.
And yeah, I'm like, his definitions of consent and boundaries are because if his friend even says, did she say no? And he's like, well, she did it first.
Yeah
exactly, that's right.
And I wrote at this point, I'm like, oh no, he's an asshole, he deserves to die.
So anyway, he comes home and he's all wasted, and he like drunkenly calls the girl, which is just very bad.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, call me back so I can apologize again. Like, fuck off.
Yeah.
She doesn't have to do anything. She owes you nothing.
And then how does he go down into the basement? I think I've skipped.
So he wakes up and he doesn't go down just yet, but basically he wakes up and he's like really hanging, goes through all the stuff, and he hears a noise. That was it, in the basement. So he gets like a knife, because he's like, right, there's someone down there. And he's like down, like, oh, and I think he even shouts, like, I've got a gun.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a gun.
Yeah.
He just like has like a knife, and he finds the secret door. And you
Which,
know,
can I just say, a surprising number of people find this random rope on a shelf
yeah.
and pull it.
But
The
what I
rope
found
door.
really interesting is, you know, when we first see this like secret room with Tess, instantly as a woman, we're like, what the fuck is this? No, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is bad. When he sees it, he goes back upstairs and Googles if he can add it to the square footage of the property and starts measuring it.
I know. I actually
Like,
couldn't. I thought it was like hilarious,
yeah, he's a
actually.
man. He doesn't have that fear. He's just like, this is my property.
Well, it also is his character, this
Yeah,
like
yeah.
his gender, yes, but also his character just being again like so self-absorbed and only thinking about his situation and his money and you know
Yeah.
his problems. So he gets all Bob the Builder with his measuring tape. Yeah, it goes down
He
there.
even measures the rape room and doesn't seem to have any issues with the fact that there's like a blood-stained bed and bloody
A
handprints on the wall.
camera set up,
Yeah,
yeah.
he's just like, oh yeah. Oh, but past the hallway of, oh yes, because when you first go down into the next part, when Tess first goes down, you are like, it looks like an old like mine shaft or something that at this point they were
That's what
in.
I wrote. I wrote, is it
Yeah.
an old mining cave because
And
of
there's
the
like
way
all of
that
these
the.
cages with like food bowls in that are all empty. And yeah, he just walks past them and is just like la 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 la, measuring all of that.
And he finds a room, and
Oh.
there's like, I know. He finds a room where it's all like bedding on the floor,
Yep.
and there's this really old school TV playing a VHS video on repeat about breastfeeding your baby and bonding with your baby and holding your baby and
Yep.
just like how to care for a baby, basically.
Yeah, and in big writing, I've just got written down what the actual fuck.
Yeah, it
This is
was,
terrifying.
it's so disturbing. It's like all the fucked up things from several other movies combine like the worst parts of them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in House of a Thousand Corpses when they finally find like Dr. Satan's like underground
Yeah.
lair. It's like that.
Yeah.
It's but worse in some ways. And so
Yeah.
anyway, he finds this room and of course he's immediately like, what the fuck? So he hears a noise in the.
Well, because he's had the tape measure, it's like one of those long, like metal
Oh,
ones,
that's right.
and something
Yes.
grabs it and pulls it away from him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, so like the tape measure goes like flying back and yeah, that horrible metallic sound. And he's got his flashlight, and I love that his flashlight starts playing up and you get it just starts like flashing, which I think is even scarier than it just being off. So,
Yeah.
and as it's flashing, you start seeing like the shape of like the woman, this white woman. And every time it flashes, it's getting closer and closer. And he's just like, ah. And then the next thing you know, it's like got him. And he's thrown into like a hole in the ground with a cage, like locked door over the top. And Tess is in there. And Tess like grabs
Doesn't
him.
he, does she throw him in or does he fall into
Or
it? Oh.
he might fall into it. I'm not sure.
I think he
Did she
falls
like
into it.
chase him into it or something?
Well, I say that only because I wondered if she re tends to only kill or be, yeah, angry towards men, or more so because of what's happened, which is
Yeah.
revealed soon. But I don't know. That's why I kind of make that distinction. Like maybe she would have like killed him, like she killed Keith, but he fell into the trap.
Yeah.
And so Tess is in there and she immediately like covers his mouth to
Yeah.
stop him from screaming. But there is a, did you notice the part where he's got the light and his knife? The way they filmed it was like it was just all you could see was his arms and then the
Yeah.
like flashing light in the dark with his like little stick arms. I don't know why it made me laugh. But yeah, then you get a flashback,
Yeah.
which I really like how they did this flashback because they didn't tell you it was a flashback. There was
Nope.
zero indications. There was no squiggly lines a la Wayne's World. There was no like card at the bottom that said the year. Basically, it's the same house. And again, with this shot, like the way that it kind of transforms it, all of a sudden you can see houses on either side of it, and they're like nice houses. And you see a man, like the neighborhood's nice. And there's this man, like walking out of the house, and he gets into the car, flips the ignition, and the radio comes on, and they're talking about Reagan. So I'm immediately like, okay, it's like the 80s
Yeah.
ish time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
So
he.
the neighborhood's all beautiful. There's kids playing out the front, you know, like there's people everywhere. And yeah, it's just like a normal American
suburban. Nice,
yeah. Like yeah. suburban neighborhood. I loved this scene because this whole bit of the flashback, because of the way that we follow this man who we find out his name is Frank. And the whole thing is shot like we're behind him, so we just see him like walking and we like follow him. So like we're like watching him the whole time. And yeah, it's always like behind him, which is really, really cool. And
yeah, I liked how that was shot.
Like
yeah.
he drives to like this like store, basically.
So he has the home birth shopping list.
Yeah.
So he goes into, I don't know, it looks like trying to think of what you'd call it, maybe like a Walgreens, something like yeah. this type of like a pharmacy type store. And the lady helps him. And he's buying things like diapers, like newborn diapers.
Yeah.
Plastic sheets.
Yeah, he says he needs plastic sheets and then he needs like diapers and like nappies and things. And she's like, oh, how old's the baby? And he's like, oh, she's not here yet. And like, oh, okay. And he says that basically they're having a home birth. And she's like, oh, bless your heart. And then she's like, oh, well, was the midwife giving you a list? And he's like, we don't have a midwife. And she's like, okay, you're gonna need all of these things, like latex gloves, like
yeah. She helps him.
Yeah,
she does the list right. But you get him out in the car, and he loads all the groceries into the car, and then you see that he's watching this woman in a blue car.
Yep,
and he's watching her load her groceries in, get in her car. He's watching from his car, and then he follows her. And he basically follows her home, parks sort of around the corner from her house, and gets out a mechanic, like, jumpsuit.
Yeah, like a uniform.
And that says the name Carlos on it, which I thought was sort of hilarious because Frank is extremely, like, white.
He's tall. I mean, he's kind of blonde, blondie.
I guess you could have a white guy called Carlos. Sure. Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I don't know. So he goes into, he knocks on the door of this strange lady's house and he says he just needs to check, I don't know, the gas meter or something.
Yeah, I think he says he's from like the water company or something.
Oh yeah, the water company.
There's a problem with they've had some like outages in the neighborhood. Is he okay just to come in and check the water pressure? And she's just like, yeah, of course, come in.
Did she ask him for ID? No, I don't think she did. It was the 80s. So she invites him in and he comes in, goes into the bathroom, turns on the tap. While the tap is running, he unlocks the window into the bathroom.
Yep.
And then goes back out, tells the ladies like everything's fine. And then does it flash back to the present? Is that, I wrote you hear screaming. I don't know. Maybe
so. No. So he goes back to his house, and the neighbors are out the front, and he's like, "Oh, Frank," and that's where you hear his name. It's like, "Oh, Frank, we wanted you to know."
Oh yes, the conversation with the neighbor.
He's like, "Look, we're basically selling the house. We're going to be moving away," and Frank makes it clear that he's not going anywhere. So he goes into the house, and you follow him into the house. And the layout, you know, it's kind of trashed inside. It doesn't look very nice, but it's the same house. And you see him walk to the basement and you hear him go down this, open the basement door and go down the stairs, and you can hear the screaming.
So it's coming. Like it as he opens the door, then you hear the screaming. And as he closes it, it's just like, it's scary. It's so upsetting. Yeah. But the way that the sound is done, you only get that like glimpse of it, just that 1 second of screaming.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh my God. And then we flash back to the present again with no real indication that we're flashing back to the present, but here we are back in the present, and they're underneath this hole in the ground, and the mommy monster is putting like a bottle,
so she puts like this like baby bottle in, and basically Tess is saying to him, stay calm around her, she only wants you, like she attacks you if you get upset, she only wants you to be her baby. And she shoves this like big plastic like baby bottle filled with milk into the cage, and he refuses, and Tess takes it like straight away. She's like, and yeah, like AJ just can't drink the milk from the bottle. So he gets like pulled out of the hole in the ground and dragged
off.
Oh,
now you're really going to be punished, Justin Long, because now you're getting breastfed.
Yeah, but I loved this because, like, this whole part of the film, like, from as soon as he goes out on his night out and admits to what he's done, but it's like, oh, but, you know, like, completely blasé. He knows. He absolutely knows what he has done is wrong. He knows that he's a prick, but he doesn't want to admit it. And it was like, you know, she was offering him the bottle and he wouldn't do it. So, you know, no, I don't want it. Well, now he's been violated. Now he's being raped. He's going to take that. She's got good boobs. He's going to take that boob and he's going to get breastfed in the breastfeeding room.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Sorry. Now's time. Now's the time. The breastfeeding room. Yeah, don't want to go in there. No. So, but you know, my question here for you is this: to me, you were sort of put off an X by the idea that old women, like, again, going back to this hag-sploitation. So to me, this does the same thing, but with motherhood to an extent. It makes it monstrous. Yeah. It makes the idea, it reduces women to mothers and wanting to be mothers and vessels of carrying others and makes it scary and makes the idea of, like, monster mommy scary. So is that not the same kind of thing?
So at this point, yes, that's exactly how I was feeling. I'm like, oh, look, yeah, another. So women become monstrous when they're old. Women become monstrous when they are, you know, reduced down to the essence of motherhood, where she just wants to, you know, care for her babies, you know, and it's you know, very much like the abject.
Well, it's more like monstrous feminine trope. I mean, the things that make us women are the things that make us monsters.
Changed my opinion on that slightly, but at this point in the film I was 100% like, oh, look, another scary, you know, oh, look, just because this is not a typical naked woman, female body that we see in the media, it's hideous and disgusting and monstrous. So at this point, yes, absolutely. I will talk a little bit later on about why my opinion has changed somewhat on that, but yeah, at this point, absolutely.
You know. and yes, and I'm dying to, like, hear your thoughts on it, because I think it part of it is how it was handled in this film versus the other one.
Yeah.
And that is part of the reason for me that I prefer, you know, this sort of version.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. So while this is happening, while the mommy monster is breastfeeding Justin Long, Tess uses this opportunity to escape.
Yep.
And so she smashes through the window. She
gets out of the hole. Yeah, she runs out of the basement. The basement door is shut again, so she starts smashing that little window that we see her kind of in earlier. And as she's crawling out of the Mommy Monster has heard, like, Mama has heard the noise of her escaping, so he's chasing her, basically. And she, as she's, like, crawling out, we can see the camera coming up behind, like Mama's coming for her. But at the last minute, the kind of the homeless guy from before who was chasing her down the street runs up and grabs her and pulls her out. And we see, like, Mommy Monster, like, leaning out of the window and then backs away because she doesn't come out in daylight.
It is, this whole sequence is extremely intense.
Yeah.
It's super quick. It happens in, like, a second. And Tess is smart. So you're just like, go, 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 go. I mean, I was just like, get out of there. Very intense. But yeah. And then you have the homeless man who pulls her out, kind of tries to start to explain.
Yeah.
And he says this line that gave me chills. He said, she comes out at night.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh.
Yeah, he's like, you know, I live in the horse tower. You need to get away from here. And the what got me was when he says to her, she's not even the worst thing in there.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck else is in there?
Oh, my God.
She's not the worst thing. Yeah. What else is down there?
What else is down there?
Yeah.
Oh, that his, like, everything that he, all the information and details he was giving were giving me chills. So
yeah, it's like he's saying, oh, she'll come after you. Like, telling Tess, you need to get out of this neighborhood. She'll come after you. She wants you. You need to get away. And Tess is like, oh, but there's a guy down there. Like, I can't leave him. She'll kill him. And the guy's like, no, I'm not going in there. And so Tess, like, basically tries to get help. So she goes off to get help. And at this point, we flash back to AJ, Justin Long, who is down in the basement, and he finds yet another hidden room. And I think
I wrote he finds the worst room of all.
He does. So is yeah. he? I feel like he's being like chased by the woman. She's like, the mum has come after him again.
Well, when
he gets to the door, like for this new hidden room, she like backs off.
Yeah, she won't go in. But yeah. basically, while Mommy Monster was chasing Tess, he took that opportunity to try and run away.
Yeah.
And then obviously she comes back when Tess escapes, Mommy Monster, and sees him running around. And then exactly as you said, when he goes into this particular door, she won't follow him in.
Yeah.
And so what I thought was so interesting about this, so Justin Long comes into this room and he doesn't even see the guy in the bed immediately. He sees like a TV with stacks and stacks of VHS videotapes, all labeled with either women's names or like a short description. So you can see like Redhead from the gas station, for example.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you don't get a close up of them just yet. But it's fairly bad. And then he hears a noise and he turns around and he finds basically like super old corpse man. He's not dead, but he may as well be. He's like super
it's like the guy in Seven who
yeah.
with Sloth. All the like no like the one was it no it was the one who never left his room. He was like starving to death or something.
Was that not Sloth, the one in the bed that they thought not was like... dead? And then he like coughs and he's like, oh my God, he's still alive.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Is that Sloth? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that one. That's what it's like. So then Frank makes a sound and Justin Long jumps and he turns around and he's like, holy shit. But what I thought was so interesting about this is that immediately Justin Long assumes that the woman did this to the man. He assumes yeah. that this poor man in bed is being, you know, terrorized by Mommy yeah. Monster instead of it being the other way around. And so yeah, it's just absolutely. So interesting, like, to see how his mind works like that. Yeah. So you kind of have the two scenes are intercut with each other, that Tess is attempting to get help, like trying to, she goes to a gas station, calls the police, whatever. And then you've also got this intercut with Justin Long talking to Frank.
Yeah, so we realize it's Frank from the flashback and he's now super old and he's down in the basement. And yeah, so we have this really, really frustrating scene where Tess has called the police and these two policemen are there and they basically are just like, she's all dirty and she's trying to say to them, like, look, I've been held captive for God knows how long. The guy I was with, he's been murdered. And they just are like completely dismissive. They don't believe her. They're not going to the house. And they basically think, she's like, I'm not a crackhead. And they're just like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah, no, they're
jerks. And they keep
getting,
like, on the radio, they keep getting, like, oh, there's been, like, a shooting here or something's happened there in other neighborhoods, like, downtown. And they're like, oh, we're going to go, bye. And, yeah, so they don't do anything. They don't listen to her. They don't believe. And she's like, aren't you listening to me? I've been held prisoner for however long by a murderer. And they're just like, yeah, you're probably on crack. Oh, he says, like, she, like, swears at him. And he's like, hey, I could take you downtown to let you sleep this off. And I'd be like, sure,
the only crime I can see is you trying to break into this house. I was yeah. like, for fuck's sake. I don't know why she didn't say to them, help me get in, all my stuff's in there.
Yeah.
Like, I'll show you. I'll prove it to you. But whatever. I mean, the cops were, it's already been established that they're not coming to that neighborhood. They're not bothered. The yeah. fact that those cops are even there for, like, 5 minutes, they're probably like, just get me out of here. What the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, she smashes into the house.
Yep.
You have this scene, this almost peaceful scene of like the living room, like the table on the interior of the house. And then into that sort of calm scene comes like a rock through the window. Yeah.
She smashes Tess, the window.
Yeah, she smashes the window to come in and get her keys. And I'm thinking, yes, leave, get your stuff, get in your car and get the fuck out of there. And I know, like, to be fair, she doesn't know what a horrible person AJ is, but even still, like, again, what is the loyalty to Keith, to him? Like, that was very frustrating to watch. But again, it's this commentary, isn't it? Like, it's what women do very, very often.
Yeah. I mean, I do genuinely think I would have issue just even a pretty much complete stranger. I would have issue with just, like, leaving them to die. And I know that that would probably end up getting me killed.
I would think, like, go and bring back help. Go and find a cop who believes you. Go clean up for... Go do what you need to do.
Yeah, yeah, go do what you need to do. Yeah,
I'm not saying leave him there.
No way I could actually, like... I can't do anything about this. I don't have a, you know, any sort of...
Like,
I weapon.
wouldn't... What I wouldn't do is what she does, which is she goes back in there. Like, yeah, that, I would not do that. But
no.
Anyway, we're kind of jumping ahead because basically, while this, she does smash the window in and get her keys and she gets in her car. But the monster mommy, like, comes outside, right? And she runs her over.
So she goes in, gets her house keys. And as she's in the car and she's turning the ignition, I just call her Mama at this point. Mama comes, like, running out the house, like, screaming. And Tess just drives the car. And, like, hits Mama and, like, pins her against the house. So she's, like, pinned. Very, I'm pretty sure this has been done in, like, both Halloween films and Friday the 13th films where you pin them against the wall. But, so she does that. And she's fucked up. She's fucked her car. Car's not working. And at this point, we flash back to AJ. And this is when he's, like, looking at the videotape names. And he puts the videotape in for like the redhead at gas station, and you can hear all this screaming, and it's basically Frank raping these women, and he's like, what the fuck, like, what the fuck is wrong with you, like,
cause he's so already... so interesting again that he's you almost think, oh, he has the decency to shame Frank for what. And I also wasn't sure, like, you don't see the videos, so you don't know what's going on. You're say raping, I was thinking like torture, probably inclusive of rape, but like someone screaming, like, I mean, you know, it could be anything. So you leave that up to your imagination, which is, as a woman, worse. We're probably imagining worse things. Yeah, 100%. So he turns around and has this like shaming Frank, like, what the fuck's wrong with you? And I'm thinking, what the fuck's wrong with you? What the fuck's wrong with all of you? But interesting how he puts himself separate from Frank. Yeah. Frank's a different type of monster than what he is. Yeah. Not all men. And I'm not one of those men. Like, I found all of that super fascinating just to watch play out, like, where his morals are.
Yeah.
Like, and his moral compass.
Point, like, from this point, once you realize, you know, this, for me, like, once he's in that room, to me, it's like he's facing himself. Like, you know, he can't see that he is also a monster,
right? And exactly.
He's like faced with a version of himself, and and like Frank can't really speak, and he'd been like gesturing, and he gets him some water, and then eventually he like picks up the little dresser drawers and pulls it next to Frank, and Frank's like in there being really old, like ratcheting around in this like drawer, and I'm like, he's probably gonna get a gun.
He gets a gun
because AJ has said, oh yeah, you know, people are gonna, I'm missing, I'm such a big shot, everyone's gonna come looking for me, the police will be swarming this place in no time, don't you worry, we'll get you out of here. And he gets this gun, and at first he points it at AJ, and AJ is like, what the fuck, and then he pulls it to his head and shoots himself. So Frank kills himself.
So quick question for you, do you think Frank was being kept there by Mama because she wanted to torture him, or because she was taking care of him? Like, she wanted to get back at him for what he'd done, or to women, to her, or she was, like, in her mind, really thought she was helping him.
I think he locked himself down there. Like, he took himself down there to live with, I'll go
these
into
women.
Into that a little bit more later. But yeah, like, I'm pretty sure it was just him, like, down there, and he just got old and knew that she was taking care of him.
So, well, I was thinking that maybe it was kind of like the jig is up. Not that he's enjoying life down there anymore. He's like too old, but it's like, okay, there's strangers breaking in, finding your videotapes. Like, you're fucked. You're spending the rest of your short, miserable life in prison if anyone does come. So he's just like, let me just, I'm out. Let me not take responsibility for anything as usual. And just, I'm out, and kills himself. So anyway, after that happens, Tess has stupidly come back inside. I mean, I guess she thinks like Mama's dead. So
yeah, and she doesn't know that anything else is down there, even though the homeless guy said to her.
Right. So she thinks it's okay. So she goes in looking for him, and as she finds AJ, he's shook from what he's just seen, and he accidentally shoots her in what, the stomach? Like
in the abdomen.
Right. So as we know from Reservoir Dogs, that's a long death. So anyway, as they're coming out together, Justin Long's kind of like supporting her, trying
like
to help get her out the
her.
Door. They discover that Mama's missing.
Yeah, she's not there anymore. The car's fucked up. They can't drive it. So she's like, I know where to go. So they
and he can't, he doesn't have his keys, or I don't know what
the keys
it is.
Are back inside the house, and he's like, I'm not going back in there.
Yeah.
So they
she's
go
like,
to the
okay.
water tower.
She's like, I know where to go. Yeah. And so they go to the homeless man Yeah, at the water tower, who tells her some more information about this house that I guess she's been in there for 40 years.
Yep.
And he says something like, a copy makes a copy of a copy. So basically, Frank is raping women, they're having children, and then he's, I guess, raping the children and they're having children and so on
Yeah.
and so forth. It does make you sort of wonder what happened to the rest of them.
Well, I think those cages were obviously that we saw earlier, the little cages with the bowls were obviously where he kept the children. And I wonder if it was a boy, if he was just killing them. If it was a girl, then he was like waiting until they were like child, bearing age, and then like having a baby with them. And then if they were then like dying. Because yeah, she's basically Mama is supposed to be, she's Frank's daughter, but she's like the product of incest.
Right,
Now, I
exactly.
had a slight issue with this in that because she is clearly very far, like genetically wrong. She's very disfigured, she's very deformed, she can't really speak. But so the flashback was to the 80s, and I'm guessing so that's like 40 years, so that's when she was born, which means if he And he was like probably like in his like 50s then. Me and Andy were discussing this. If he was like in his 50s in the 80s when Mama was born, like that means that in reality he could only have been doing this for like 30 years. So how many generations is there really gonna have been before her for her to get like this messed up from inbreeding?
I mean, the other, well, exactly. I don't know, unless it was just messed up from like the first try, or I don't know.
Yeah.
But I was also thinking, I don't think he was 50. I think he was meant to be like, I don't know, maybe even late 30s, 40s. I was putting him like in the 40s. People looked rougher back then.
Well, no, it was just because just because of like the age, so if he was super old, so if that was 40 years ago, he's probably in his 90s when we see him in the bed when he kills himself.
Yeah, 80s, 90s. Yeah, you're
Yeah,
right.
like I'd
He
put
is.
him in his 90s, so like 40 years ago would have, and also to give him enough time to have fathered enough children and then fathered children with those children to kind of create this kind of monster. Yeah, like it just it, that kind of threw me a little bit, but yeah. So
Yeah, I agree. Like if you look at the timeline and like into the real details, but the other part about it is that you just don't know. So maybe he was, because he was obviously bringing multiple women according to the videotapes. So, but that's what I mean. Like the number of tapes that there are does not also correspond with like the number of cages, or like, and then none of them survived. And then if none of them survived, like where are the bodies? Sure, I guess you could bury them anywhere, but interesting that anyway, the
yeah.
and so many people going missing. I don't know, but without thinking too hard about it, it's all horrifying. So, yeah. So you've got, as they're sitting there, and he's the homeless guy sort of giving the history, she asks, Tess asks, like, we're not safe here. We need to go. And he's like, oh no, we're safe here. She can't get in. And then immediately after he says that, like, Mama, like, Kool-Aid mans through the wall and fucking like rips his arm off
Yeah,
and
and
beats
beats
him
him
with
to
it.
death with his own arm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I've lived here 15 years and she's never come in. Smash.
I did think like it was coming, but it still took me by
Yeah.
surprise, like how quickly it happened.
But
So.
I love this bit because like during this scene we have this like AJ being like, "Oh, I feel so bad that I shot you." And like he
Oh,
has
yeah.
this like real moment of like
Moments.
clarity where he's like, "No, I need to like am I a bad person or am I a good person? No, I'm a good person who just did a bad thing." And you're like, he's not talking about shooting Tess. He's becoming aware of what he did. And it's like, oh, "Okay, is this going to be a turning point for him? Is he going to realize like what a dick he's been?" But yeah, so he's like, "All right." And then she smashes him, so the two of them managed to get to the stairs to get and like get to the top of the water tower, and she's like, "Oh, you've got a gun," and he's fucking useless, and he drops the gun down the stairs
Yeah.
immediately, and he just has this moment where he's like, "She's gonna get us. She wants us, so she's gonna get us." And I'm like, "Oh, is he gonna be a hero?" No,
Fuck no.
he looks at Tess, and he's like, "I can get away, but you need to slow her down." And I was like, "What is he gonna like?" Use her as a, and he literally grabs like Tess's head and he's like, "Hey, mama, come get your baby," and throws Tess off the fucking tower.
The final moment of assholery, the
Oh no, this
crowning
isn't even, no, I don't think
achievement.
this isn't the worst for me, but yeah, you have this amazing like even Tess is just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Look on her face. And Mama runs across and dives off the water tower, reaching for Tess because she wants to save her baby. And
she does. She manages to shield her from the fall.
Yeah.
Tess survives. So Justin Long goes running down the stairs. Gets and you almost think, like, does he feel bad? Like, does he feel guilty? And he realizes Tess is alive and he starts making excuses. He's like,
oh, this is the worst bit for me. He's like, oh my God, I panicked. I know you understand. I had to, you understand. I didn't let you go. You slipped.
Yeah. So bad.
Fucking prick.
You hate him so much. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, Mama isn't dead. And so she roars to life and she fucking grabs Justin Long, lifts him up.
Her baby.
And rips him in half.
Well, Before she rips his head apart, she pops his eyes.
Oh, yes. Grapes, yes.
And all this goose. And like then splits his head in two. And I've just got written, good.
Good. Yeah. Good. I wrote, awesome.
Yeah.
It is a great and satisfying death.
It really
100%.
Is. 100%. Like, yes.
And then Mama is sad that Tess is hurt. And so here you have this really touching moment, right? Like, it's sad. And she gives her, like, the signal for, like, the, like, I don't know how you call it, like, sign language signal for kiss.
Yeah, she, like, puts a kiss on her head because she's trying to pick Tess up and Tess is like, no, like, she's, like, in too much pain. And then Tess is, like, she tries to pick her up to take her back to the house and Tess is like, no, I can't go back there. And she has the gun and she, like, puts it on, like, Mama's cheekbone. And I think she kind of knows and she's like, oh, you know, my baby. She's, like, kissing Tess on the head and Tess, you know, kisses her baby goodbye and Tess shoots Mama in the head. Kills her.
It's clever because, like, multiple other films now that we could say this about, including X, including Relic, you know, where you are empathizing or pitying the villain. And so here's this monster who just wanted, that's all she understood. She's a product of what happened to her.
Yeah.
And so you have this full circle moment where now she's still a monster, but it's like she doesn't know any better. The real monster was Frank, and this is what's happened. And so when Tess kills her, you feel something, and it's really unexpected. But also I have to mention, when she pulls the trigger as the gunshot sound goes, the scene flips to the card directed by, and you have the director credit, which is a very stylized choice. And then you've got Be My Little Baby, the song playing, which is, you know, a good choice. But and so that's how the film sort of ends. And then it flashes between the credits and, like, Tess walking
out of the neighborhood
basically, while the song plays. And so I really liked it. So
I loved it.
Yeah. So I stand by my rating of 4.5, and my notes just sort of say it's unpredictable and twisty, and I think that I loved that part of it because in a genre where films are increasingly and incredibly formulaic, here was something that got me every time. Like, I thought I knew what was going on and I didn't at all. And that's very unusual. I also found it very scary. I was afraid. There were very tense moments. And before it's like that moment in Descent where you first see, like, the monster flash, like, behind the character. This gave me that kind of feeling.
Yeah.
It was suspenseful. It was sharp. It was stylized, but in a way that served the story. So I just think all of it served this story. And the gender kind of controversy about, like, okay, yes, monstrous feminine, but, like, who are the real monsters here? Men, you know?
Yeah.
And both of the males, Justin Long and Skarsgård's, they both had fatal flaws that had to do with them not listening to women or being so, in AJ's case, like, overconfident and, you know, unaware of his surroundings because he doesn't have to be. So again, that sort of male privilege in both cases was their fatal flaw, which I kind of loved that as well. So who's the real monsters here?
Exactly. And this is why like I said before, you know, when I first saw Mama, I'm like, oh, look, here we go again. Woman is the monster. And then it's like, actually, no. I feel like for AJ to get his, like, comeuppance, it had to be a woman. It had to be, you know, it had to be. He was so, like, blasé about what he did. And, like, he threw Tess off the fucking tower. You know, when it came down to it, he was, you know, who was the barbarian, basically? Was it AJ? Yes. Was it Frank?
Yeah.
You know, they were just the same. They were both as bad as each other, just in different ways. And AJ would never, ever accept that he was as bad as Frank. So it had to be like this, like, Momo is basically the, you know, the end result of years of generational abuse by male.
Trauma,
by Ben.
Yeah.
And so fact that, you know, that kind of, she became like the embodiment of it, which I loved. So that made me feel like it was a little, like, it was more than just another, oh, look, like, monstrous female body.
So true. And also, like, whose story was it? Because it starts off that it's Tess's story. And then we sort of switch over to AJ's story. And then somewhere in there, we also switch to Frank's story and the sort of backstory of Mama. And so you keep switching and getting these different perspectives as well, which I thought just kept it so fresh. Yes. And it was just something very different. So I just, yeah, I really, really recommend it. Definitely.
I loved it. It was so good. Yeah, absolutely. Go and watch it. If you, obviously, I hope you've already watched it. If you've got to this point in the podcast, watch it again if you need to.
And it does fully get into these thematic elements and these concepts in a way that X didn't. Was quite superficial and kind of touched on it. And that was, you know, we both had our qualms with that. And in this one, it goes a lot deeper with it. And it also touches on other things, like I said before, like the classism and sort of, you know, status and race slightly, but really about gender and our gender roles. And yeah, it just went deeper on those things and it caused a lot of conversation and a lot of thought after the fact, which I love. I love when a film just really makes me think. And
me
so
too. And it's fun.
Also
and
loved
it's scary.
It is fun. Yeah. I mean, you have moments of reprieve, so it's not so heavy constantly. And I appreciated that. So yes, I think like a very strong recommendation and a strong rating from your horror roast here.
Yeah, absolutely. Please go online. Let us know if you've seen this. Please let us know what you thought. We'd love to hear from you. If you can give us some great ratings and reviews on whatever podcast platform you choose to listen to us on, we would very much appreciate it. It really helps us get through the like algorithm and new people can find us that way. But yeah, we would love to hear from you as always. And I'm excited to see what we're going to do next. We have some ideas.
Yes.
But yeah, it's all very exciting.
All right. Well, until next time, Brothers Keg, take us out.
Bye.
Bye.